Good morning. The gospel this morning follows directly on the heels of the gospel of last week and is in many ways similar. First of all, it picks up another one of the great images that we get from Isaiah. All of last week's story was built on Isaiah's image of the vineyard, and all of this week's story is built on Isaiah's image of the banquet. The banquet, reprised at least in one of its Isaiah forms in that first reading. The banquet that God sets for God's people. So when Jesus begins to tell stories about a banquet, people understand immediately that he is indeed talking about the kingdom of heaven. It is, of course, also from this same time period, namely Holy Week. We've had Palm Sunday a couple of chapters ago. This is the debate in the temple during Holy Week. And Jesus takes on all comers, but most of his criticism is directed to the chief priests and the elders of the people, who within a few days will have him turned over to the Roman authorities, with whom they are very much intertwined. So you get a controversy story with a banquet image. But it's been, like last week's gospel, reused and reused and layered and layered. And to change metaphors a little bit, when you put things together, you wind up with a seam. So if you find the seams, you can find where they were joined. I mean, you look at me standing here in this. This could be woven from top to bottom without a trace, for all you can tell from that distance, right? But if I turn this over, you see the seams. You know how it got put together. Well, we can see the seams here and see how it got put together and see what the individual pieces of the tapestry were about, what the individual layers of the cake were built up from. Probably originally started with a story that Jesus told that we can reconstruct from this by taking off the pieces that have seams, and by comparing this with a similar story in Luke. Doesn't have a lot of vocabulary in common, so it's not two versions of the same story. But there are too many details in common to suggest that they don't both descend from a story that Jesus told. So if we reconstruct that way, what do we get? Jesus tells a story about somebody who gave a dinner, sent out invitations, nobody came. Sent out more invitations, and they were returned abruptly, shall we say. And then finally, the householder sends out people to bring in whomever you can find, the bad and the good alike, the highways and the byways. Interesting story. Especially interesting story in the courts of the temple during Holy Week. The householder, very much being likened, right, to the God of Israel. And those who don't come, the leading people who are turning down the invitation, the chief priests themselves. But if they won't come, then God will bypass them. God will bring in the rabble from the streets of Jerusalem and the villages of Galilee. God will fill the banquet hall with guests. Very much aimed at the contemporary leadership of Israel of Jesus' day. Watch out, chief priests. Don't think you can ignore God and be in bed with the Romans too much longer and get away with it. That's probably the form of the original story and its import and its aim. The second layer of the cake was added not long after Christ's death and resurrection. They're mining all the stories that he told for more ideas about who he is and about what this death and resurrection means. So it becomes a wedding feast. That's only in Matthew, not in Luke. Thrown by a king for his son. Now we're getting a little more focus on that. The king's son. and they are ignoring the invitation to honor the king's son. This further sharpens something that was already there in the first layer. You know, declining the invitation probably means you didn't listen to John the Baptizer and you're not listening to me, you're not listening to God. But with this added focus of the wedding feast for his son, it becomes very clear. Then, after 70, after the Romans destroyed Jerusalem, they couldn't pass up the opportunity to add this other patch. The king was enraged and sent his troops to destroy those murderers and burn their city. Obviously, this does not fit in the original story, right? The timeline is a little suspicious. How long does it take to organize a military campaign, even a small one? This guy calls up his army, besieges a city, and burns it to the ground, and dinner is still ready. I don't think so. It's a seam, you can tell. It doesn't quite fit. But it was added after 70 because they couldn't pass up the temptation to suggest that the fall of Jerusalem had something very much to do with the refusal of the chief priests to accept John's preaching or the preaching of Jesus. And that, too, is a further development on a theme that goes back to Isaiah, who is not above castigating the leaders of Israel and saying the whole nation will suffer for your blindness. So that's the story as it's going along. You get through the 70s into the 80s. By now, the Jewish and Christian communities are separating, and you get still a little different focus on it. And it becomes less about who should be the leaders of Israel, Jesus and the disciples and John the Baptist and his disciples, or the chief priests. And more about Christians and Jews. The Jews, by and large, are not accepting the invitation of the gospel. There are good, solid Jewish roots to the community, but it's a minority. And now they're beginning to take in more and more Gentiles. And that produces a little question. Get a big fight over it in Acts. And a little reflection. And some of the reflections get to be a little bit ugly. You get all of this retold in terms where the people who were called and did not come are the Jews, and those who were brought in later and accepted are the Gentiles. So it becomes a Gentile over Jew story. Now, this bothers Matthew. First of all, of course, because he's Jewish. And very good heavy slice of his community is Jewish. And because he's concerned about the relations between Jewish and non-Jewish Christians. And because he sees the spiritual temptations. It's very easy to become arrogant when participating in the criticism of one's enemies. If it's God put them out and brought us in, yay! Yeah. Bad, good, bad, good. Doesn't work out very well, very long. So Matthew adds a whole new story. I mean, you could have just gone back and quoted Paul, as we did last week, about remember that you do not support the roots, you're just a graft, the roots support you. But we're not even sure that Matthew knew Paul. Remember, what we have is just, you know, one book apart in the Bible. Didn't exist in those days. The question, who had copies of what books? And there's little, if any, evidence to suggest that Matthew's community had copies of Paul's writings. So that may not have been a resource that was available to them. So what he does do is take a different story and add it on. Becomes another piece of the quilt, another layer on the cake. Story may well go back to Jesus, but surely not from this context, because the seam, again, is too obvious. The king comes in and finds somebody not dressed in a wedding garment, is highly incensed, and has the bouncers throw him out. Well, you know, the way the first story sets it up, that just doesn't work. There's a seam there. I mean, if I throw a black tie dinner party, and you get an engraved invitation, and down in the left-hand corner there it says black tie, and you show up in jeans and a t-shirt, I have a right to be upset and to throw you out of my party. But if I throw a come-as-you-are party, how can I be upset if you come as you are? They sent out the servants to bring these folks in off the street. So what are they going to come? What they got on? How can the king be upset? Obviously, the story doesn't integrate. It's been layered. But he layers it, despite that, because it makes a point. Yes, you have been invited to this banquet of fine, rich food dripping with marrow, these choice wines well refined. You've been invited to this, but not through any fault of your own. You've done nothing to deserve this. It's not something you earned. God doesn't owe it to you. It's not something you were promised. You are not part of the promises to Abraham or the covenant with Moses. It's only by God's totally gratuitous grace and favor that you've been brought into this banquet at the last minute. So don't use that as an excuse to get too full of yourself and say, wow, you know, they got put out and I was brought in. Look for me, all right? Don't think it's a free pass. If God brought you in freely, God can bounce you out freely. Maybe God's bouncers know how to screen a crowd. That's the real skill of a bouncer, is the pre-screening of the crowd. You heard about the bouncer who walked down the aisle outside of a hall, saw somebody who just looked a little suspicious to them. So the bouncer said to him, you're a friend of the bride or the groom? Said the groom, so get the hell out of here, this is a bar mitzvah. God's bouncers, you know, can know how to put you out, you know, just as God's messengers know how to invite you in. You know. So it becomes a cautionary tale to these new and tempted to be very full of themselves Gentile Christians. Yes, rejoice in the banquet and be glad that God chose to invite you, because God didn't have to. But read that also as a cautionary tale. Strive to be worthy of the gift you've been given. I mean, if you don't have black tie, at least wash your hands and feet and put on a clean shirt. You know? Come properly attired. Accept the gift. Show it some respect. That part of it is still very relevant for us, just as is the very fundamental part, the base image of the banquet. All that stuff in between is very much conditioned to its own time and its own place, may not be quite as relevant for us. But the image of God's banquet is relevant for us. God sets this banquet for us, invites us all in. It's one of the master motifs of the Bible, one of those dominant images that you find in one place and another. It's a good image to think about. A good image for prayer, a good image to just sit and dwell in, that God has invited you to the banquet. What do you do when you're invited to the banquet? How do you feel when you're invited to the banquet? Who is it that invites all kinds of undeserving folks to the banquet? Just meditating on this banquet table of God. Think about this as the foretaste of the banquet table of God. We who didn't know each other have been brought together as a community. We who had no right to it are given a seat at this table. We who had no claim on it are given parts in the preparation of the meal and in the service of the meal. We are fed at God's table by God's bounty. Eat the food and know it is good. Taste the wine and know it is sweet. Rejoice in the God who sets the banquet for us. That's very relevant for us. And Matthew's ending layer, capstone parable, is also relevant for us. Don't get too full of yourself because of that. Remember that it is a gift. Try to grow into it. You have been invited to a banquet way over your head. Learn how to behave at such a banquet. Learn who God is. Try to be like that. Recognize the mercy and the grace and the favor that you've been given. Extend that mercy and grace and favor to each other. God has not called us just to fill up an empty hall. God has called us to share in the banquet and to learn from it, to set a banquet of our own, a banquet for all the brothers and sisters around us. So take this banquet image, this feast image, play with it a little bit yourself in your thoughts and in your prayer. It's been rattling around since well before Isaiah. It's been developed carefully in layers in Matthew's gospel, and it's still a strong image for us today. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.